Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, July 14th, 2007, and I'm Harley Schlanger. I'll be your host today. Well, we've come to a moment when a decision must be made. Are members of the Congress of the United States prepared to take steps to remove Dick Cheney from office now, or will they continue to speechify while doing nothing as Cheney continues his drive for expanded war in Southwest Asia? The number of co-signers on Representative Dennis Kucinich's impeachment resolution, which is H.R. 333, has grown over the last couple of days since July 4th, with several more people adding their names to the list, including Representatives McDermott from Washington State, Johnson from Georgia, Ellison from Minnesota, and Farr and Filner of California. This week, Kucinich's call for Cheney's impeachment was met with a thunderous ovation and rowdy applause at the NAACP convention in Detroit. And Senator Barbara Boxer from California, who is a person not known to shrink from controversy, Boxer announced on Ed Schultz's nationally syndicated radio program that she thinks that impeachment must be on the table. Now, pushing the members of Congress is the growing demand for Cheney's ouster from the American people, with one poll last week showing 54% want him out through impeachment, and I believe another poll showing that Cheney is in single digits for popularity. Less than 10% of the American people like him. Yesterday, Lyndon LaRouche, who has been behind the fight for Cheney's impeachment since sometime in 2002, stated that he thinks, and now I'm going to quote Mr. LaRouche, if Hillary Clinton were to issue a clarion call for the immediate impeachment of Vice President Dick Cheney, she could win the presidency by acclamation. Unquote. Since he made that comment, the word is going out far and wide that Senator Clinton should move to lead the fight to oust Cheney. Today we're going to look at this mobilization by members of the LaRouche Youth Movement to move the Congress to act before the end of this session, which means by the end of this month, to oust Cheney before he launches new wars and tramples the constitutional rights of all citizens of our nation. I'll be joined today by Megan Beetz, who is with the LaRouche Youth Movement in Boston, Hector Rivas in Houston, Pascal Chevrier in the War Room in Leesburg, Virginia. But first, I want to bring in Cody Jones, who's attending the executive board meeting of the California Democratic Party, which is convening in Sacramento, California. Cody's a member of the Los Angeles County Democratic Central Committee and is part of the team that's getting out LaRouche's statement calling on Senator Clinton to take the lead. Cody, what's the response been to the LaRouche Youth Movement organizing there on impeachment?
Well, so far there's been a certain level of shock because, as Lyndon LaRouche always does, he figures out a flank which is going to immediately put people's minds in a completely different place than it had ever been before. So as we're approaching people with this idea that the way that Hillary can really catapult herself to the front and, most importantly, do what's right, is to come out immediately for the call of impeachment against Cheney. And so we're getting a pretty open response to it. I mean, depending on how high up the ladder you go for the Democratic Party, you'll get from the typical line of, well, this is going to waste time and dollars, which is obviously insane, down to open response people saying, hey, that's actually very interesting. That's a great idea. I hope Hillary does it. You know, let's try to move it forward. So it's a mixed response, but most importantly, it's eliciting a very provocative response.
Now,
and,
Cody,
that's definitely what I want to do.
Do people know about Barbara Boxer's comment?
Yeah, it's widely recognized that you had a shift in the fact that Boxer came out calling for the impeachment, saying you got to put impeachment back on the table, and it's a nice counterpoint here in California because on the one hand you've got Boxer, Maxine, others taking a point for impeachment, and then on the other side you've got Pelosi, who has continued to sort of put up the roadblock on the impeachment. So right here is the main battlefront on this question in the Democratic Party.
Now Pelosi is I assume she's not there this weekend.
No, she is not here.
Are there people
accused from the birds at the duck pond, and they're ducking the issue here.
Is she? Are people talking about putting pressure on her? Are there some people who are going to take the initiative to go to talk to her about this?
Yeah, I mean, people are saying this is something Pelosi's name has come up a lot. Whenever we bring up the issue, they say, "Hey, we got to get a Pelosi on this." I mean, one, we've been giving out also the condoms, the Stop Protecting Dick condoms, which has a picture of Dick Cheney on one side and Pelosi on the other. And so people are, that's actually a very nice icebreaker, and people saying, yeah, definitely, we got to get Pelosi on this. I mean, just also as a point of note, in much of the organizing that's been taking place in California in general, a lot of Democrats, when we bring up impeachment, they're saying, hey, why don't we get Pelosi while we're at it? Because they're very unhappy with her blocking of this flank.
Now, you mentioned that there you've talked to some elected officials. I know from talking to you earlier that one of the people you talked to was Elizabeth Edwards, the wife of John Edwards. What was the discussion with her?
Well, principally we had one, Quincy O'Neill, spoke with her, who, as many people may know, is the vice chair of the African American Caucus. And I spoke with her, and we both hit her on the question of saying, look, is maybe John Edwards could preempt Hillary and be the first one to come out calling for the impeachment of Cheney. And what she has said is that obviously John wants to hold the administration accountable for their crime, wants to get out of the war, but yet she totally pulls back on the question of impeachment, sort of regurgitating the typical line. But she was open. We gave her the LaRouche statement on Pelosi. We brought up the Hillary thing. She was interested. I mean, one of the interesting things is that she did, during her speech, bring up a line, which is one of the lines I think Lynn was the first to put out publicly, in talking about her own daughter, who's 25 years old, saying that that generation will be the first one to have a less of an opportunity to succeed than any of the previous generations. So we kind of brought that up to her as well, saying, look, that's correct, but if you're going to really act on that sentiment, you've got to provide leadership, and the number one issue for leadership now is the impeachment of Cheney. And, you know, I think it caught our attention.
Now, Cody, before I let you go back into the organizing, I have just one other question for you, and then maybe one of the other panelists has a question for you. But I was just interested in the overall response now that people seem to be more accustomed to the fact that the LaRouche Youth Movement is a central feature of the Democratic Party. Are you finding with Quincy as an office holder in the African American Caucus, the vice chairman, a number of you were Democrat of the Year and I believe the 43rd legislative district last year.
Right.
What's the response generally to the involvement of the LaRouche Youth Movement in the California Democratic Party?
Well, I think the sentiment is typified by a comment that was made to myself by someone who is the secretary of the party, who said that you guys are the most well-organized, best educated, most apt to fight element of the Democratic Party, hands down. And it is recognized that we are the new emerging leadership. And it's very clear here that we pretty much are the only, even though we only have upwards of 12 young people here, we're dominating the environment and shaping the discussion. And people are recognizing that, and they're open to our leadership.
All right, so anyone on the panel have a question for Cody before he dives back in? All right, I guess people want you to dive back in, Cody.
Yep, I'll go in and start removing some sticks from these uptight butts here.
Well, I think, as you said, the condom with Pelosi and Cheney's picture on it is an icebreaker, to be sure. Thanks for joining
absolutely.
Us, Cody.
All right, talk to you later. Bye.
All right, so we just got a report. This is the LaRouche Show. We just heard from directly from Sacramento, the California Democratic Party Convention. Before I talk to the other panelists, let me just give the email address if people want to send in questions, and we have a question coming in already. So we will take your questions today. Send them to us at radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. And I want to mention that July 25th, there will be another webcast from Lyndon LaRouche. Hopefully it can be a moment of celebration because Cheney will be gone by then. If not, it will be a moment of further escalation. And on that, let me bring in from the start with the war room Pascal, who I think has completed his tour of duty in the war room, but completed it with a discussion with the leadership of the entire international LaRouche youth movement yesterday. Pascal, why don't you just give us a quick sense of the idea of the mobilization now internationally, that we have one organization of youth fighting internationally.
Yeah, hi, Arlie?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So, yeah, basically my turn in the war room is finished, but in the transition yesterday we tried something which is new. We have these meetings, conference call every week, where we try to gather people from all around the United States and Canada and figure out what happened during the week and how the mobilization is going on, whether it's on the impeachment, issue, or how people are driving it. And basically yesterday we tried something completely new, where we decided, okay, well, we have been doing that for, a couple, many months right now, and we would like to find out if we can do it even with more locals. So we decided to put Mexico, Argentina, Colombia, and Australia on the call, and basically we had a really amazing conversation about what's being thrown at us by Lynn just 1 hour before with the call with the challenge to Hillary Clinton. So basically we were going through the operations in the different countries and also stressing the point that Lynn said, the issue right now is the Hillary flank. So that's what we've been discussing yesterday, and we had many good reports of what people are intending to do in the next weeks, and that's been really firing, cross-firing what we have in terms of operation in the United States, in Argentina, in Australia, in Canada, and so we had five capitals of the Western Hemisphere plus Australia who were on the call.
So we should be getting responses then probably over the weekend from the initial lunge with this flank, I take it.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. We are monitoring the activities right now from the war room, and we're trying to get an hour-by-hour count on what's going on, what are the discussions, especially, Cody was mentioning, what's going on at the e-board right now on the West Coast, and what are the reactions towards the flank that Lynn just put out and that we're trying to spread as fast as possible.
And this is an international issue, because I want to read the first email we got in from Rayo Cordes in San Luis Obispo out in California, who asked the question, what is the real danger of a Guns of August? Are any of the senators or Congress aware of it? Now, I'll take the first part, and then, Pascal, you can pick up on the second part of that question. But the August has been a time where wars have been launched. In the last century, World War I began in August, as well as the German invasion of Poland was started in August. And in the United States, you have the Congress at home. People are slathering on suntan lotion and eating hot dogs and drinking beer, and they're off at beaches and lakes and trying to escape from reality. And meanwhile, we know, I mean, the thought of Cheney in a bathing suit is horrifying. So I assume he's not going to go to the beach. He's going to stay in his bunker. And he is launching, he's preparing World War III with his threats against Iran, with his work together with Prince Bandar on behalf of the British Empire and British Aerospace, launching civil war in Lebanon, civil war in Palestine, and as we know now from reports that just came out this week from Jamie Fallows in Atlantic Magazine, that Lynn Cheney, when the administration first came in, the wife of Dick Cheney, the controller of Dick Cheney, was calling for war against China. We also saw the threats delivered by Cheney and then by President Bush, another one of Cheney's puppets, threats to Russia recently with the deployment of ABM systems in the Czech Republic and Poland. So the question of the guns of August is a real threat. And that's why Lynn has been emphasizing the importance of finishing off Cheney, getting him out of office before the end of this congressional session, before they go on recess at the end of July, early August, because he is committed to it. The financial system's coming down, and they have no other strategy. Now, Pascal, from the reports we get from Washington, D.C., what can you tell us about what the congressmen, the senators, and members of the House of Representatives, if they're aware of this danger, and if so, why are they not moving?
Well, if they're not aware of it, probably they're not doing a lot of work at their office. Because, I mean, we have the youth movement in Washington, D.C., which represents, I would say around 30 people. So, and we're going into Congress and in the Senate almost every day. In the last weeks, we've been saturating the Congress and the Senate, and also we're going at a different metro stops to distribute massively, the leaflets, whether it was the letter of John Kerry to Alberto Gonzalez on the question of the BAE scandal. And so people know about what's going on if they accept reality, if they accept that, we're in a crisis. If they deny it, well, they're going to see us just more often.
Well, and this is part of what Lyndon LaRouche is referring to when he says the congressmen got beaten up in their districts over the July 4th recess, that a number of them are getting increasingly aware that the population has turned on this administration.
Yes, and, one would have said at one point that the population was hard to move on these issues and, the reaction was not too good. But really now, it's really not the case. I mean, the population is really far ahead of people in the Congress. So basically, when the congressmen are going, or the senators are going back in their district, are trying to find out what's going on around their office, well, a lot of people are angry about the situation. And, you just look at the situation from November when these freshman congressmen were elected. There was a mandate which was, given to them to actually impeach Dick Cheney and get out of the war in Iraq and do something with the money which is spent on the war to actually rebuild the United States. So, yeah, whenever a congressman gets out of his office, we save some congressmen from being lynched.
Well, let me give our listeners again the email address. You can send us an email question for our panel at radio@larouchepub.com. I also want to give you the website, because the new LaRouche PAC website is must-reading, and must-reading several times a day. It's LaRouchePAC.com. That's LaRouchePAC.com. And you'll see that it's a very easy-to-follow format where we have breaking news up to the minute. And then when you go on to those stories, when you log on to them, you'll see there's backup material, the whole resources of the intelligence operation and also the deployment operation of the LaRouche movement is now available at your fingertips. So you can pull down stories, take them out, and call your congressman and say, why are you not joining this impeachment fight? So it's LaRouchePAC.com. Now, I want to go into a little bit of the background of what has made this situation urgent that LaRouche would issue this challenge to Hillary. There was the summit that took place right before July 4th in Kennebunkport, Maine, at which President Putin of Russia, who had been invited by President Bush's father, the former President Bush, to come there to talk about an alternative to this Cheney war push. And the LaRouche Youth Movement was up there in Kennebunkport, and we'll hear from Megan Beetz in a second. But what happened is that, for the moment, Bush was away from the influence of Cheney, and he had what Lyndon LaRouche called an almost human response to the encounter with President Putin. Now, also part of that was that former President Clinton, who was with former President Bush at the funeral of Boris Yeltsin, the former Russian president, back at the end of April, that both Bush Sr. and Clinton had spoken with Putin, and they had talked about shifting away from war, the threats of war that are coming from the Cheney administration, to instead a war avoidance policy around the SDI, which was essentially Lyndon LaRouche's policy adopted by President Reagan in 1983. Now, this created an opportunity to escape from what otherwise is just a policy of permanent warfare. And yet, as soon as President Bush got back to Washington, away from adult influences and back under the influence of that force of evil, Dick Cheney, Bush again is talking about war against Iran, against Hezbollah, and against everyone else. So, Megan, why don't you give us a sense of what you're getting from the Northeast, the organizing up there, and especially the potential for impeachment from a congressional delegation. I mean, it seems to me that Massachusetts should be one of the places where we're getting a lot of activity for impeachment. So what do you think's going on?
Well, there's a lot going on. As you said, I think we're the only state in the nation whose congressional delegation is entirely Democrats. So it, not only that, but we have one of the highest densities of young people per capita in the entire nation here in Boston. So it's completely fertile ground to make a real breakout revolution and actually lead other regions of the country in this thing, which is why our organizing has been so crucial. And I can just say a few things about Kennebunkport. We sent a squad of about five people up there, and I think this sort of typifies the quality of our intervention generally. You had Kennebunkport's a really tiny, tiny place. A little
fishing I've been
village.
There.
Yeah, small, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like one road, and then you find yourself out the other side of town. But you had, when our squad arrived, you already had about 1,000 people gathered for an impeachment rally. And the impeachment rally was being organized by the mothers of one of our organizers' friends, who happens to be from there. So she actually put us right up in the front of the rally with our banner. We had a banner about Cheney's wanting to start a new Cold War, and we also had a banner in Russian saying something about LaRouche's infrastructure program. So we were immediately able to organize that, and generally throughout the day we had a presence pretty much everywhere, and the town was swamped with Russian and American press, Middle Eastern press. The whole place was covered with Russian and American flags. So what we were doing is we were intervening and organizing people around the potential for what has to be done after Cheney's out. And so we were distributing a pamphlet with LaRouche's visit to Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
We were also distributing Jeff Steinberg's article about the BAE scandal in Russian and English. We made a little side trip into the Kremlin press room and started briefing the Russian press on this thing. But I think the key thing from that intervention, but also generally our deployments in Boston, is that people are responding not just because we want to impeach Cheney, but people are responding because we're organizing them around what has to be done after he's out.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and that's pretty important because in Boston you have a lot a lot of activism. You have a lot of people raising money for whales and
mm-hmm.
children in Africa and global warming, and everybody in the summer, everybody's out in the streets supposedly being politically active, so the population gets somewhat immune. But we're finding that people stop sort of shocked, especially when we have some of these larger deployments where we send everybody out on one deployment. We set up a chorus, so we have singing, we have pedagogicals, and we sort of dominate the sidewalk there. And what we're finding is that people actually respond when you challenge them to think about, okay, what are you going to do when Cheney's out? here's what LaRouche is proposing. We have a plan. We know what to do.
You mentioned that Boston is a city with many, many students and universities, and some people might say there's a pretension that people know things, but when you go out with the, for example, the story of what happened at Kennebunkport and also the potential now for a post-Cheney era, do you find people want to discuss it and are intrigued by that, or are people aware of the kinds of things that happened surrounding Kennebunkport?
Well, what you find a lot is that people know, they may know like tidbits of news. They may know that it happened. They may even know a couple, like you have a lot of poli-sci students and Harvard students and whatnot that could even recite to you some of the things that happened there, some policies on the table in Congress. But what people aren't able to conceptualize is the possibility for real change. And what grabs them is when we really challenge them, to think about something which they think is impossible, which is LaRouche's call for an entirely new world economic system. And people are especially provoked around things like when we say to them, okay, you know, we're going to build a tunnel underneath the Bering Strait. And things like this really, really grab people because the way that they're thinking is not creative. People are assessing the world situation from within the current circumstances. So when we introduce something into their minds which they think they wouldn't even consider initially, it really kind of pops their bubble, and they settle down for some real discussion.
I think some people might be especially challenged since the little tunnel they had in Boston seemed to collapse last summer, I think. So
you're right.
The idea of the Bering Strait Tunnel is a great engineering project. And of course, we also had from Italy the discussion this week of the Brenner Pass Tunnel that would connect Portugal and Spain to Eastern Europe going through Italy. So, Megan, we'll get back to you in a minute because we're going to, the second half of the show, we're going to talk about the question of creativity and organizing, because it's clear that Cheney has to go. As Lynn put it the other day, he said, look, the time for debate is over. I'll read you his quotes. This is a family show, but you need to hear the truth spoken. He said, the crap stops now. Debate, debate, debate. We had it in Vietnam, and we're doing it all over again. The debate itself is dishonest. What we have is more lies. Our troops are dying while the lies pour out. Don't say you're supporting the troops by putting them out to be shot. And LaRouche, in saying this, said, there's no more reason to debate. There's nothing left to debate. The impeachment must be on the table, and that's what has to be discussed. So since that's clear, and I think Lyndon LaRouche is not the only person who said that about the issues are clear. I know that there are people from John Conyers and Waxman's office and a number of other Democrats who have been putting out material, investigations on the NSA wiretapping and on the U.S. attorney's scandal and so on. And it's clear the Constitution has been violated repeatedly by this gang. So the question is, how do you move people to do something which is necessary, which they don't think is possible? So that in a couple of minutes, we're going to be taking up, as the second half of our show today, the question of what kind of organizing process can move people into the fight. But I'd like to bring the third member of our panel in right now, Hector Rivas, from who's working out of the Houston office. Hector, you know, it used to be said that Texas is Bush country. I think that was probably an insult to Texas, but what do you think's happening? You've been here for a couple of months. Are you seeing some changes?
Yeah. I think some of the what can really demonstrate the change that is occurring, particularly in this state, but I think it's a reflection of what is occurring nationwide, actually, is, I mean, a lot of it stems from this trip where we went to in San Antonio about 2 weeks ago. And, you know, you have the typical schedule that's set up by the Democratic any type of Democratic forum. And the funny thing that occurred was that they didn't even follow anything that was on the agenda, because these guys were so pissed off at the establishment, I guess what you can call the status quo Democrats. They were just so pissed off with the way they've been acting, with the way they've been ignoring the constituency, that it just became it became a four-hour discussion on how to overthrow the establishment of the Democratic Party, how to take over the Texas State Convention. And I think the thing they put forth, which I think was really important and brings legitimacy to this revolt, was that whether they know it consciously or not, they're completely throwing out the Rohatyn types. And it's proven for the fact that they've repeatedly said at this meeting that we're going to do this and LaRouche is in, right? That, like, this is what's going to be part of it. The LaRouche guys are in. They're going to be part of the discussion. They're going to help to shape this conspiracy, you know, and so on. And, you know, that went on for 4 hours straight, and it was made very clear. Even to say, you know, there's some people there that didn't like us, but it was made clear by the chairman of the caucus there that we're going to revolt. We all agree to that. And since we all agree to that, LaRouche is in and Rohatyn is out. And so
you know,
that,
Hector, what I find interesting is we had a report earlier from Cody from California, where there are Democrats, LaRouche Democrats, who are elected officials who are very much involved in shaping the fight in the party. Megan is on from Boston. Megan introduced a resolution on housing and emergency measures that need to be taken for housing at the Massachusetts Democratic Party Convention, which passed. And LaRouche Youth played a very significant role in shaping the discussion there. And now you're saying in Texas, you're seeing the same process where a grouping in the Democratic Party, which calls itself the Progressive Caucus, but actually represents farmers, minority populations, and so on, is saying we've had it with this business-as-usual crew, the Rohatyn crew in the Democratic Party. We've got to change the party. So basically, that's why you can say it is a national revolt.
Mm-hmm.
So what about the people? When you get out and organize, what are you finding with the population?
Well, it depends where you're at, because there are some of those who still accept George Bush and Cheney as their Lord and Savior, unfortunately, in this area. But the thing is, what's been interesting is we've been asserting ourselves into quote-unquote private property, which is practically Houston in entirety. And so, you know, really highly Republican areas. And the funny thing is that people are usually just completely open just when they walk up and they see us organizing in the streets, mostly in, you know, different regions where we're not typically allowed because of the so-called capitalist state of the area. But I can tell you for one thing, I mean, there's been cases where we had the police come after us, and the funny thing is they would actually keep us there in our favor. And so in a sense, that kind of demonstrates the mentality of the population. I mean, the majority of the population wants Cheney out. The typical response is he should have been out a long time ago. What the hell is going on? And so, I mean, it's in a sense, Texas, in a sense, really wants to make a shift. It's already there. There's only a few bozos that are, you know, stuck with the Cheney policy. And even, you know, even some of Republicans, a lot of the Republicans actually already, you know, disagree with everything that's going on. And I can tell you personally, in last week, I personally got in a fight with Nick Lampson, who was taking over Tom DeLay's district.
Yeah, Lampson is a Democrat who was elected to the seat with, by the way, with a significant effort of the LaRouche Youth Movement to oust Tom DeLay.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead.
Well, yeah, that's right. And so, you know, this guy thinks he has to, you know, I think really his mind is just he's trying to appease to both Democrats and Republicans so that he can get elected again, as, you know, I really don't think that's going to happen. But the point was that we raised the question of impeachment in a very aggressive way, which I don't think I have to get into here. And you just had this split inside the room where you had some of the hard liner Republicans who were just, you know, shouting out, "What evidence do you got? Stupid idea." And the other half that just shot back and just said, this war is bullshit. There was this one Republican woman that stood up and she just kept saying, "What benefit is there, you know, getting our boys coming back from Iraq with, you know, with one leg and two fingers?" And so there was just this brawl that just took forth after we mentioned impeachment. So Nick Lampson's, you know, just kind of sitting in the back, doesn't know what to do. And so in that respect, you just see that people are already ready for a change. I mean, people don't, you know, the United States is really what a lot of these guys do support. They supported Cheney and Bush perhaps in the first term just because they really thought that it was a justified thing to do. And now that they've seen that this has been a lot of bull crap and they're seeing a lot of the disaster that's going on in Iraq, they're just breaking.
Now, Pascal, I know that we've heard now from three corners of the country. We did do a deployment into Iowa this week with Senator Grassley. Do you have any of the details on that? Because apparently there were some interesting confrontations with him at his town meeting.
Oh, yeah. Well, we sent a crew, which was originally we have the Detroit office, but we had decided to go and see if Chicago was open to impeachment. And so far, I think that we had a good response. But we decided from Chicago to send people in Iowa to go for Grassley's, meet Grassley at the different town hall meetings that he had in the
Now, Grassley is one of the senior Republicans in the U.S. Senate, and we've seen a real running away from the Bush administration with Voinovich, with Lugar, and others. So what happened with Grassley when he got to his meeting?
Right. So he was going to different little towns, and we're known to intervene in these meetings, but some old folk preceded us, and basically a long time Republican, he stood up and basically said to Grassley, "Well, you know, if you don't go for impeachment, I'm gonna make sure that the next year I devote to get you out of there,
saying
get you fired.
Grassley. Yeah, if Grassley doesn't do the job, this guy's gonna campaign to defeat him."
Yes, and it's a long-term Republican who didn't vote for the Bush administration in 2004 because he was against Cheney and because of Cheney.
All right, well, let me summarize the first half of this program in a moment. You're listening to The LaRouche Show. It's live on the web every Saturday, and it's archived on the LaRouchePub.com website. So if you missed a show or if you like the show and you want some of your friends to listen to it, you can go on to the LaRouchePub.com website and let them hear it. You also can call in to get literature, and I would recommend that everyone who's been listening to this, who agrees that Cheney should go, but is not yet involved in the battle, I'm going to give you a number you can call to get active and a number where you can call to get literature, get some of the material that Megan spoke about on the Bering Strait Tunnel Project, on the BAE scandal, and on Lyndon LaRouche's latest announcements and his initiatives to save this nation from the Cheney policy of restoring or turning the United States into an arm of the Anglo-Dutch Empire. You can call us at 800-929-7566. That's 800-929-7566. And we'll send you some literature and give you some marching orders to get going. Now, what we've been discussing so far is the initiative taken by Lyndon LaRouche yesterday to call on Hillary Clinton to essentially put up or shut up, that it's not enough to say you're against the war. There have been a number of resolutions put forward. There's legislation being put forward by the Democrats, even some of the Republicans now. I think it was Warner and Lugar put forward a resolution calling for a timetable for withdrawal, and yet Americans are still dying. Iraqis are still dying. Terrorists are still recruiting as a result of this war. And so the question that was posed to Hillary Clinton by Lyndon LaRouche was, why don't you step forward and take the leadership in the impeachment fight? We're seeing many congressmen join. We saw Barbara Boxer, very importantly, put her position behind the impeachment fight. So, Hillary, if you were to take this as an initiative, then we'd be able to get rid of Cheney. It would establish you as the front runner for president, as opposed to waiting until January 2009 to do something. So in that context, the question comes up, what's holding people back, and how do you get through the blocks? And I'd like to go back to Megan, who has been in Boston since the 2004 Democratic Convention. And there's a unique project that was launched by Mr. LaRouche in Boston, and Megan's a key participant in that, which is to develop the highest quality chorus that's ever existed on the planet, to take up the most difficult challenge of singing Bach's choral music in classical bel canto capability. And the reason for that is what, Megan? What are we doing with the choral work to move the country?
All right, well, I think there are several aspects to it. One of them is clear from our deployments. When we go out into the population, which, despite the fact that Boston is supposed to be and is to some degree a very intellectual city, the fact is that there's the culture is not a culture of beauty, just like everywhere else in the country. So on our deployments, what we find is a real there's a real change in the air when we begin with the chorus to sing Bach, especially Bach. It happens when we sing some of the other musical pieces, some of the canons, the funny songs, or the political words, but especially when we sing Bach, you find that the population, anywhere, anybody that can hear us, which is usually from, you know, way down the block, is gripped. And I think there's a very real reason for that. There's something very real about the effect of beauty on the human soul. And I think this is something that people too easily push out of politics. You know, they say that people believe that beauty really doesn't even matter. It doesn't have any kind of political effect, but they're wrong. Because what we find is just the fact that we actually, you are physically changing the space of the area that we're organizing and changing the mental cognitive space of the population that's involved in this experience. What we find is that you're able to get into much higher level discussions because people let down their guard. There is something actually touched within them, and they actually are opened up to be able to talk to you in a very human way, you know, and really consider the kinds of proposals that LaRouche has on the table from a very human standpoint.
Let me ask you a question on this, Megan, because you were a student, music student when you went to college, and one might say, well, you were inclined toward classical culture, but what happens when you talk to someone who's just immersed in the popular culture? They may not like Al Gore, but they watched 40 hours of the Live Earth concert because they really wanted to hear the Beastie Boys. Or, you know, someone who thinks country music speaks to their soul. Can you really reach them with classical music?
Well, it's kind of gotten to the point we don't really argue with them in words about why classical music is superior. We tend to demonstrate it to them. And I mean, yeah, you get incredible responses. We have people coming into our office pretty often to try to come sing. We invite them into our chorus rehearsals, and these are people that have never sung classical music in their life. But they were, number one, very moved by what we demonstrated to them, and also very challenged, because no matter how, you know, how much you cheer pop music, the ability of the bel canto singer, the versatility of the voice, and the potential to actually communicate ideas with the voice when you're trained in the classical bel canto fashion is far superior to any pop singer.
And do people get the connection? I mean, a lot of times people come up and say, well, I know LaRouche, he hates Cheney, or LaRouche is for FDR, but what does this have to do with classical culture? You get a lot of questions like that, I assume.
We get a lot of questions, and it's really fun. It creates a wonderful paradox for people because they'll have people that they think they hate LaRouche, right? That's what they've convinced themselves that they hate LaRouche, but...
Yeah, they heard something bad about him once.
Sure, like in 1982.
Yeah.
They heard something bad. And so it's a complete paradox because they have this strange belief, which they don't know where it came from, and then they see something which absolutely appeals to their human side, something beautiful in front of them, which is LaRouche. And I remember this guy I was organizing one time, I think it was last year, he just came out and said it. He said, man, that's strange. A beautiful chorus with a LaRouche sign in front of him. And this is the person who ended up talking to us who never would have before.
Now, we're having in Boston within, actually it's next week, a cadre school. Do you want to say a little bit about how the process of cadre schools work toward recruitment? Because one of the things that Lynn has been emphasizing is that to change this country, we need to have a legion of people 18 to 35 years old who take up this challenge on a higher level. So what happens at a cadre school?
All right. Yeah, next weekend we're having an event where for about 2 days, from Friday evening until Sunday afternoon or evening, we're getting as many young people as possible to come with us away from the city to a campground we rented and actually spend two days seriously engrossed in studying these ideas, studying the political strategic situation, and struggling to actually understand what process created it and where we are. We're challenging people to study science and Kepler with us and to delve into some of the creative scientific work that we're doing. And we're also challenging people to dive into the music work that we're taking up, which is not only learning how to sing the right notes on the page, but we're asking young people to actually step into a social process where you get 20, 30, sometimes for the whole East Coast movement, even 70 young people together in a chorus who are actually trying to recreate the specific idea of Bach and actually present a discovery in the form of a classical chorus to an audience. And this is something which I think the offices all around the country have about every 2 to 3 months, or maybe 3 to 4 months, which is really an experience because we're preparing the next generation of leadership. And we're asking young people to come in and actually begin to make themselves prepared to have begin the process of mastering real ideas, real principles of the universe, real conceptions about the nature of their own minds and the capability of their own minds to know the universe. And I'll keep emphasizing it. Almost everybody negates the fact that that's really the substance of politics. And that's really the substance of what builds civilization, is the kinds of ideas that your population knows and is mastering, is discussing in their free time, and the kind of beautiful culture and ideas that actually shape the way that people think about policies.
Well, and if you look at our culture and you see the degenerate side of whether it's music or art or film, television, popular culture, it explains why we have a thug like Dick Cheney running the country. So if someone is interested, if you live in the northeastern part of the country, the Boston area, and you'd like to come to the cadre school, if you call the 800 number and leave your name and number if you're between 18 and 30 years old, or if you have a child or a grandchild that you think would be interested, and we'll get your name and number to Megan, and she could call them. So it's 800-929-7566. Now, I'd like to pick up on this question of recruitment and the educational process with Hector. You've been having a lot of fun going through basic real economics as opposed to the fairy tales that people think of on economics, that somehow they think gambling, casinos, and lotteries are parts of the economy. Tell us a little bit about the class you've been doing, Hector.
Well, I think we've been doing for the past month and a half, right, to we constituted a series of economic courses that are based off the So You Wish book that was written by LaRouche in the 80s to really try to, you know, up the level with the type of quality that we're trying to develop out of people we're trying to recruit in this area, which has actually worked pretty successful. You have many who really like the idea of the approach that we took with economics is really from the approach of how the mind actually comes to know. And that the most thing that really hit them was that we look at economics from the standpoint, as was communicated in these courses, that you have to look at economics from the standpoint that the universe was created to be creative and that we're the tool to initiate creation continually, eternally. Right? That's the only role that mankind really has, is to be creative, and there is no other purpose in that. And so, you know, by initiating that being the context and that being the theme throughout the weeks that we've been having this course, really, you know, really got some people up and going, really got some people shocked, really got some people interested. You got a couple of contacts coming in still who have been really just battling with this question. And so, I mean, that's really what I can say about that.
All right, so this is the idea that we've been discussing is this question of how you get people to actually think of themselves as human beings who can do something. Because one of the things I've found from years of organizing is you get people who say something like, oh, you can't do that. You can't impeach Cheney. You can't get a new economy, a new monetary system. And what I always do is I always say to them, well, so tell me, how do you know that? What have you been doing to get a new monetary system? Because most of it is just hot air. It's like you were saying, Megan, that people think they don't like LaRouche. There's no substance to it. It's hot air. And at this point, being able to pose the kinds of questions that get people to think is the essential part of politics and is really what it's going to take to get the Congress to move behind this drive to impeach Cheney. Now, I'd like to go back to Pascal and get from you a sense of what kind of activity we're going to be having internationally in the next couple of weeks to ensure that this mission is successfully completed.
Well, obviously, there's different meeting of the Democratic Party, conventions which are going to be held throughout the country. So we're trying to map them out from the war room here in Leesburg and make sure we have, we have people in the different regions who are, ready to intervene and ready to move the issue, especially on the new flank on Hillary. But I just wanted to come back just for 1 second on the previous discussion that you had with Megan and Hector.
Go ahead.
On this question of creativity and how to actually uplift the population, recently we had discussions with a chapter of the LIM in Africa, which is pretty new. And so people in South Africa are actually gathering every Friday to try to figure out who is Lyndon LaRouche and how the ideas of Lyndon LaRouche are going to bring Africa out of the dark age that they've been in for many decades. And I think that's really striking. And I don't know if people sometime, we see all these people going out and trying to raise money and all that, but if people have been trying to put yourself into the situation of an African, and basically, he's wondering at what people are doing here, with Dick Cheney and all these issues, why these guys are still in. And while they understand that the system doesn't work, and they experience it every day. And what I thought was really interesting coming from them as a question to a political briefing that we gave them is the question that they asked was, well, so what's the significance of the five platonic solid and how we're going to be able to organize Africa? And I thought that was really interesting, and bringing them into the work of of the music, of the science of Kepler, which, and remembering classes that I've heard from Megan on this question of harmonics. And these people in Africa think, wondering how they're going to be able to get out of the dark age with these ideas and what it represents to make a discovery in terms of science and in terms of how actually human beings think. So I thought that was really interesting, and that's what we're trying to replicate all around the world.
Well, it is paradoxical, because on the one hand, it's clear that Cheney has to be ousted. On the other hand, it's also clear that having a bunch of people, whether they're the Raging Grannies or Code Pink or whatever, standing on a street corner chanting impeach, 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 that's not going to do it. And what Lynn has inaugurated with the LaRouche Youth Movement is creating a completely new intellectual force on the planet to recruit from the youth. And as I think, Pascal, you mentioned earlier, we saw the effects of this with the November 2006 election, where the voters, the young people, turned out to vote. And there's a lot of mythology about young people, that they're apathetic, that, and you know, some of it on the surface is true, but when people are given an alternative, especially as the question that's posed by LaRouche Youth Movement organizing is, do you have a future? And it's hard for people to answer that question. I mean, Megan, we've been in a situation where we've been on the verge of a increase in recruitment for a while, but we haven't quite gotten over the hump. What do you think the prognosis is for the period immediately ahead?
What we're doing is we've relaunched the idea of just having complete intellectual hegemony in the city of Boston. So we intend to bring hundreds of young people through our office, returning to work on the Kepler, to work on the singing, to have in-depth fights about the political economic situation. And we're committed to that. And so we're deploying as much as possible, because the advantage of the summer is that people are out until midnight and 1 in the morning. So that's our intention.
Actually, yeah. You recaptured Harvard Square recently, I think I was reading.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, our last deployment, which was incredibly successful, we arrived at Harvard Square at about 2 p.m. after a chorus rehearsal, and we were out there until midnight. And it was pretty incredible. I think we made about 70 to 80 contacts that day. You know, raised a lot of funds for the cadre school. We met a lot of young people. We had organizers sitting down for an hour at a time with young people, working them through geometry right there at the deployment.
So now this may be a news flash. You're actually saying that a Harvard student can be taught something about the real humanistic classical culture?
Sometimes, yeah.
All right, well, that should bring you some hope to mankind. Hector, you have any final thoughts on impeaching Cheney?
No, just that Hillary Clinton should endorse it as soon as possible.
All right, and, you know, I think you ought to be finding out whether Sheila Jackson Lee is going to do anything to call up Hillary and get her on board.
Well, you know what? That's actually interesting. Glad you brought that up, because the funny thing was she came in the middle of debate. We passed a resolution that called on the Harris County Democrats to get her to endorse the Kucinich bill. And the what was funny about it is in the middle of the debate, you know, Sheila Jackson came into the room and they asked her that if, you know, she would give some words, and this is concerning her. And, you know, she gave her a spiel, you know, 2008, that's the way to go, we're going to get a new president, da-da-da, vomiting the typical line of the Democratic Party. And right after she finished giving her plea why not to do it, they just unanimously voted on to endorse for her to call on impeachment. So maybe they can do something.
All right. And Pascal, what any thoughts you have? We have a couple of minutes to go. Any concluding thoughts on how to move this impeachment drive?
Well, I think that basically we're going to have to, if we... Like Lynn was saying, this new flank on Hillary for the impeachment is a nutcracker. It's basically a ball crusher. So what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to squeeze or to make sure that we put pressure on Hillary. And I hope that when you do that, when you actually put pressure on Hillary, she says impeachment.
Well, I would say that when I talked to Lynn yesterday, he was saying, think about it this way. Suppose Hillary were to join with Maxine Waters and Barbara Boxer. Those would be three pretty tough women and would probably scare the hell out of Dick Cheney.
Yeah, well, he's already in his bunker.
Well,
he's pretty much afraid.
We know he's scared of one woman, and that's the woman he's married to. There was a very interesting profile, psychological profile of Dick Cheney, and I can't. What do you know the website?
It's Truth Out.
Truth Out. Yes. Yeah. If people want to see it, two psychiatrists in Truth Out wrote about Dick Cheney as a thug controlled by a Lady Macbeth type wife, and Lyndon LaRouche said that there's much that he agrees with in that profile. So Megan, Hector, and Pascal, we're at the end of the hour. I'd like to thank you for joining us. I would like to urge our listeners to make sure that this next couple-week period between now and the recess in August, that the Congress is moved to get rid of Dick Cheney. And put on your calendar, July 25th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Lyndon LaRouche will be again addressing the nation and the world on the LaRouchePact.com website. July 25th, 1 p.m. If you're in the Washington area, call us at 800-929-7566 and see if you can come to the webcast. So thank you very much. This has been the LaRouche Show. We'll be with you next Saturday.